Let's face the facts. We are all addicted to our phones. But is it really for the reason we think it is? Because I think there's something we've overlooked. Our environment. I recently read an article by Dr. T. Panova about this, and it got me thinking, because, of course, I'm also a phone-addicted teenager. Well, that's a flattering way to introduce myself. My name is Arella, and I'm a high school student who is very interested in urban planning. Or, as I like to say, a certified city girl. I started this podcast because I want to help create the walkable cities of the future and make space for youth like me to discover and discuss all things urban. Welcome back to another episode of Urban Today. So, back to our big question. How does our environment perpetuate our phone addictions, and how can we fix both, our environments and our phone addictions? I'm going to start off by summarizing the articles by Dr. Panova so we're all on the same page. Why are we addicted to our phones? Panova argues that we are addicted to our phones because the real world doesn't provide what we need. What do we need exactly? She names two basic human needs and desires: cognitive stimulation and social interaction. Smartphones meet these criteria, but do our cities? When these needs are not met by our cities, we must supplement with our phones. So, starting off with cognitive stimulation. Cognitive stimulation is the activation of senses, emotions, and thoughts. Cities provide this with smells, sounds, colors, textures, etc. It's a very dynamic environment. Most people do not live in such environments. According to the U.S. Bureau of Justice Statistics, 69% of Americans live in the suburbs. And by suburbs, I mean neighborhoods where often the only things within walking distance are private homes and trees. Most business establishments are big box stores far from residential areas, and thus the neighborhood is not connected. In these environments, of course you want to use your phone, because we humans are sensation-seeking beings. We get these sensations by going to concerts, theaters, festivals, museums, bars, etc. But what do we do when those things aren't as accessible to us? The second basic human need and desire was social interaction. Do I really need to tell you this? Humans need social interaction to live. Livable cities and towns provide places for social interactions with things such as public gathering spaces, cafes, parks, community gardens, plazas, etc. This part of the article made me think of my trip to Savannah, Georgia. I spent a day in Savannah and went on a walking tour where I learned a lot about the urban history of the place. Savannah was planned to be a grid-like city with 24 public squares, kind of modeled after European squares. Today, there are 22, and each square houses like a monument, fountain, lots of trees, benches, etc. Additionally, it is a great public meeting space, but on top of that, on the edges and corners surrounding this square are public meeting spaces like cafes, cinemas, etc. So really, I think Savannah has done an amazing job at creating a livable town where people can come together, be social, and enjoy their environment. Now, technology supplements social interaction with apps such as Snapchat, Instagram, messaging. This replaces face-to-face interaction, but is it really social interaction? The short answer is no. I'm sure there are many podcasts out there that discuss the loneliness-inducing effects of social media, but for today's podcast's sake, we're just going to say no. It is not true social interaction. Our governments, when planning our cities, must take into account how to plan satisfying spaces that meet human needs. Since about the 1950s, 70s, the U.S. government hasn't, really. They've created suburbs that are disconnected and not stimulating or social. But tech companies have figured it out. They give us sensation-seeking human beings social interaction, in air quotes, and cognitive stimulation. And if they continue to create a digital world that is better than our physical one, what will the future even look like? That's a dystopian note. Let's look into some solutions as well as counter-arguments and questions. So, firstly, the solution is clear. We need to create opportunities for social interaction, movement, and cognitive stimulation. These places and opportunities must be easily accessible and convenient or else the phones will win. So, we've talked about Panova's thesis, I've summarized those articles, I've given you some food for thought, and while I can't read your mind, one thing I've been thinking of is, what if people want their needs to be met without overstimulation? So many cities are overstimulating. They're loud, they smell bad, they're polluted, and overall, they're just an overwhelming and stressful environment to experience on a day-to-day basis. Many suburbs are understimulating, and many cities are overstimulating. So is it possible to create stimulating environments that aren't on either major side of the spectrum? And besides the obvious reasons, why are cities so overstimulating and what can we do to fix it? Firstly, the lack of green spaces. Green spaces and just being in nature has scientifically been linked to being beneficial to humans' mental health. And I think that an easy solution for this is make more. Green spaces can really be made from anything. Think of the High Line in New York City. It was made from a long abandoned railroad track. Another reason cities are so overstimulating is noise pollution. Noise pollution from all sorts of things like cars, people, trains, buses, etc. So, how can we fix noise pollution? There are some really cool technologies that are being made to absorb sound rather than bounce it around. Also, trees and plants can act as natural noise pollution absorbers, and that contributes to green space. The final cause of overstimulation that I was thinking of in a city is air pollution. And I think that the biggest cause of air pollution has to be transportation. What I love about urban planning is the ideas always come back to themselves, and the livable city always prevails as the best solution. It's clear that cars are polluting and they can be loud. So, like we've already talked about, having less cars is going to get rid of lots of air pollution. Additionally, less polluted public transportation, like buses that run on clean energy or electricity rather than gases, is going to be so helpful to fixing air pollution. And lastly, more walking and biking. These are practices that have no impact at all, and it made me think of Amsterdam, which is such a biking city, and I loved the lack of car dependency there. I've touched on this a little bit before, but just thinking about all these solutions and how they continue to come back to each other and connect shows really the wonderful intersectionality of urban planning. Mental health, sustainable development, just to name a few, all of these things are connected to urban planning and prove that it is such a huge field and there's so much to explore. You may have started listening to this episode thinking that phones had no connection to our environment. Whether the connection is strong or trivial, that's up to you. But let's wrap this up. We've talked about how to fix our environments, but how do we fix our phone addictions? At the end of the day, our environment is only so much to blame. Phones themselves are extremely addicting apparatuses. Look, there are lots of tips out there to fix phone addiction when talking about the addictive device itself. And this isn't really a mental health podcast, but is it really? Because urban design and mental health go hand in hand. But I think at the end of the day, though things like green spaces aren't going to end our phone addictions forever, it's a start. And I believe that improving our environment is the first step to ameliorating our phone addictions. Thank you so much for tuning in today. Have an amazing day and try to take a walk.